You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire. 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Jemima Houston tōku ingoa, nō mai haere mai ki te Wire mō tēnei rā. Kia ora and welcome to The Wire for Tuesday the 7th of December. My name is Jemima and I'm your host and I'm joined in studio by Emily, who's producing. How's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Yes, good. Thank you. It's very nice to have people back in the studio. How are you feeling?
I'm great. A little bit nervous, but I'm excited to finally see people in person.
It is all very much good vibes up here at the station. Everybody's feeling very excited to be back, so it's nice to have some news teamers back at the station. We have some great stuff coming up on the show for you today. Ewhai aki nei.
I speak to New Zealand Disarmament and Arms Control Minister Phil Twyford about the government's commitment to an international ban of killer robots in war.
Ooh, killer robots. I speak to, Anna Madaris-Smith from Land Air Water Aotearoa about an online tool called Can I Swim Here? That can help you decide where to swim this summer.
I also speak to campaign organiser Tessa Guest about the Free Fares Initiative, which is campaigning for all students and people under 25 to have zero transport fares in New Zealand.
And finally, I speak to Stacey Vanderputten from Auckland Transport about how lockdown has impacted public transport and how AT is working to keep people safe now that we have moved into the red setting. He aha ofakaro, I would love to hear your thoughts on any of these pieces. So tukapatui mai, you can send me through a text on 5395 or Waimairane, give us a call in studio on 309 3879. Also after the show, koe e wadiwadi e ahi ana koutou te whakarongo ke e nei kōrero anō hei pakihiri rokiroki maronga i te pai tukutuku o irirangi poho, mi haere ki 95BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com. If you go to the Becasts page and then you go to The Wire, you can check out all the awesome work that the news team has done there. We podcast everything straight after the show, so do check it out if perhaps you don't have time to listen today, because there's some real good stuff there. Right, are you ready to go, Emily?
Let's go.
Irirangi Poho, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
In the past week, the government has announced a commitment to an international effort to ban the developing technology of autonomous weapons, also known as killer robots. The campaign to do so is part of an international effort to regulate the use of AI technology in war, as well as uphold humanitarian and international law. Multiple countries and international organizations, including the United Nations, are also working alongside New Zealand to ban killer robots. I spoke to New Zealand Disarmament and Arms Control Minister Phil Twyford about the threat killer robots pose and what the government plans to do to prevent them.
Could you briefly explain what autonomous weapons are?
Yeah, they're often referred to as killer robots. The technical term is autonomous weapons systems. And it's basically the application of robotics and artificial intelligence to weapons of war. It might sound like a dystopian sci-fi future, but actually this is very, very close right now. The world's great military powers are working overtime to design and manufacture completely autonomous weapons. And so basically once they're switched on and set off, no further intervention is needed or required, and these killing machines will go off and wreak havoc. It's really raised a lot of concern here and internationally. In fact, for quite a number of years now, tech experts at Silicon Valley have been saying, hey, you might want to pay attention to this because this has massive implications. That's caused governments, policymakers like myself, but also there's a big global campaign to stop killer robots. There's now really an international movement to put in place new international law to ban and regulate these things.
And as you said, the government is going to take an active stance against this form of weaponry before it's even really been deployed on battlefields or really created and developed fully. Why is this such a threat?
Yeah, we think it's worth taking a precautionary approach just because the threat and the risk is so great. There's a number of objections to killer robots. One is at a at a really fundamental ethical level, people like the International Committee of the Red Cross, who are the guardians of international humanitarian law, they've pointed out that there's something fundamentally wrong ethically with delegating to a machine or an algorithm the decision to take a human life. And there's just something abhorrent about that. There's another objection, and that is that killer robots pose a threat to some of the basic tenets and principles of international law. That is, in wartime, any action you take should be proportionate as in response to in responding to some other hostile action, that you should protect civilians, that individuals who are operating weapons of war should be individually and personally accountable under international law. And there are real question marks about whether or not killer robots, autonomous weapons systems, can meet those concerns. And then there's a third objection, and that is that mass-produced, cheap killer robots raise the prospect of a lowered threshold for war. When you take humans out of the kill chain, out of the decision-making process, you are effectively lowering the threshold for war, and we could see vast numbers of these machines unleashed in the battlefield in a real nightmare scenario. And, you know, you could imagine, for instance, vast swarms of drones that are connected and unleashed on a civilian population in some theatre of war.
As a country which doesn't experience war on its own land very often, or really at all, why is New Zealand taking such an active stance against such weaponry, and why should New Zealand citizens be concerned about these advancements?
Well, first, I think it's just in our DNA to be concerned about these things, and we've got a long track record of working on these issues. But secondly, it's not inconceivable that New Zealand Defence Forces deployed into some faraway battlefield could end up being on the receiving end of killer robots. So we have a real defensive interest. We don't want our personnel who might be deployed, whether as peacekeepers or in combat, we don't want them to be subject to these things. So, and the other thing I think is that we do, as a country, we have an interest in ensuring that humanity is regulating these things. If killer robots take over the world, and that might sound like some, you know, the premise of some sci-fi movie, but actually, the technology is developing so fast that you will soon have fully autonomous weapon systems based on artificial intelligence that are capable of learning and making decisions completely independent of human control. That is potentially an existential threat to humanity, and we have to do something about that. So this campaign that New Zealand is now going to be part of is designed to pull together enough countries internationally and international organisations at the UN and elsewhere to start a treaty that will create new international law to ban fully autonomous weapon systems, but also put in place limits and controls on all of the other, you know, there's a kind of a spectrum of autonomy, if you like, the extent to which human control is needed. There's a lot of shades of grey.
And as you just mentioned, the New Zealand government is working with and discussing this issue with other countries and international organisations. Could you just expand on that a bit more, explain what they're doing together and who may be involved?
Yeah, so some of our closest allies on this are countries like Ireland, Chile, Mexico, Austria, Switzerland. There are a few dozen countries at the United Nations who have publicly expressed support for the idea of a new legally binding rules, like a treaty. And right now in Geneva, the United Nations is having talks that have been going on off and on for the last few years, and they are culminating in the next week or so. And so we're there working with our like-minded allies to try and build support for this. But as always with these issues, there are countries who don't agree. India, the United States, Russia, Australia, Turkey, they're all opposed to the idea of legally binding rules, and they're making a number of arguments why they think it's not necessary and why they want to be able to continue to develop these technologies without regulation. So we've got a fight on our hands.
And we've talked about how technology advances so quickly that sometimes it's hard to keep up with it. So our legal systems often fumble a bit with the online privacy laws just because the technology is advancing so quickly. So how do you produce legislation that will cover all bases for technology that doesn't exist yet?
Yeah, that is tricky, and that'll be one of the challenges of the policy process and ultimately the treaty or convention that we negotiate. The important distinction to make here, though, is that we're not trying to ban or regulate the use of artificial intelligence or robotics. It's the application of those things to weapons of war. So it's the use of these machines in the battlefield. And so that's the key thing. So we're going after the behaviours more than we are the technology itself. And I mean, I think everybody will understand that, you know, AI and robotics, the latest technologies that will have a positive and transformative effect on many parts of human life. So what we're doing with killer robots is we're being very careful to separate it out from, we're not wanting to chill or restrict all of the research and the work that's being done in AI generally. But, you know, just as technology is changing our lives at an exponential pace, it's very important that we've got one eye on the ethics of the use of this technology. And, you know, there's a growing international movement around the ethics of technology used for surveillance, for example. And that's really important. I think the work that we're doing on killer robots is another aspect of that, making sure that as we develop these technologies that have such a profound effect on our lives, we don't put our humanity at risk.
That was me speaking to New Zealand Disarmament and Arms Control Minister Phil Twyford about the government's announcement to commit to an aid in the international effort to ban killer robots.
Thank you so much for that one, Emily.
No worries.
You're tuned into The Wire on 95PFM. This is the Tuesday Wire with Jemima and Emily. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Send me through a text on 5395, but we'll be right back with some more good newsy bits after a wee break. Here is I Know by De La Soul.
Greetings, girl, and welcome to my world of phrasing right up to bat. It's the daisy age and you're about to walk top stage, so wipe your lottos on the mat. Hip-hop love this is, and don't mind when I quiz your evolvements before the sun. But clear your court, cause this a one-man sport, and who's better for this than plugged one? Plugged don't one. Have to worry about me squashing other deals, cause they've already been squished. Freeze the frame of our moves the same, wish we can continue right behind the bush. You'll stay with me, I know this, but not because of all my earthly treasures, or regardless to the fact that I'm past the noose, but because... This dance to introduce myself as the chosen one to speak. Let me lay my hand across yours and aim a kiss upon your cheek. The name's Plug 2, and from the soul I bring you the daisy of your choice. May it be filled with a pleasure principle in circumference to my voice. About those other Jennies I reckoned with, lost them all like a homework excuse. This time the magic number is 2, cause it takes 2, not 3 to seduce. My destiny of love is brought to an apex, sex is a mere molecule. In this world of lust that I have for you, it's true, true. Let this rhyme style get somewhat poured in the mold. Hold my hand and we'll pick my plantation of daisies for a bouquet of souls. Soul. At the cut of a rim, take it as filled to the rim as in brim. Squeeze your stoop like Betty Boop, then make camel alphabet soup and spell plug ones within. Forward march is the same when transistors will play. Coming to bed is the move. Dolby sound will be then top crown when I put the needle into your groove. I got a good thing, and in full swing. I show this in gifts, words or letters, but even without those 3, I know you'd be close to me, cause
I know I love you better.
it's I again, and the soul that I send is taking steps to reach your heart. Any moment you feel alone, I can fill up your empty part. We can ascend till we reach daylight heaven, and in a spin we'll hit the top 10. Then we could meet Mr. Stucky and Pops, Brother Lucky will preach, let the wedding, the wedding. Shot by an arrow of Cupid through a string of a G-clef, my dear, I claim your death. And if you could hear me, by golly gee, true boy is ready for what you possess. We could live in my plug tube home, and on Mars where we could be all alone. And we make a song for two, picture perfect things, and I sing of how
I know I love you.
Kombucha is New Zealand's only pure kombucha tap room.
Everything you need from your kombucha. Five different varieties on tap, even more in bottles, all brewed organically with no flavourings, colourings or preservatives.
Try their new Hop Butcher, New Leaf's trademark non-alcoholic beer brewed with kiwi hops. Everything you love about beer without the beer.
New Leaf Kombucha, New Zealand's only pure kombucha tap room. Visit today at 37 Crummer Road, Grey Lynn. Also, they've got a talking parrot. Come on!
I am a predator. I need to be free.
Tom Hardy returns to the big screen as Venom, one of Marvel's greatest and most complex characters.
Venus, why me?
I'm not a crazy man. I'm a vengeful one.
Venom, Let There Be Carnage. Starring Tom Hardy, Michelle Williams, and featuring Woody Harrelson as Carnage. In cinemas now. Rated M. Contains violence and offensive language.
All I ever wanted in this world is carnage.
A group of emperor penguins huddled close, moving together in synchronized waves. This is Universal Harmony. Universal
Harmony. Radiating togetherness with positive energy. This is Universal Harmony.
As wholesome as fresh sliced sourdough and as empowering as winning a prize at school assembly. This is Universal Harmony.
Tuesday nights from 10 till midnight are reserved for Universal Harmony with Dr. Snickers. Only on 95 BFM.
Putting the bubble back in your moe. That's Universal Harmony.
Why should New Zealanders care so much about this?
Because your children will curse you if you don't.
The Wire.
You're back on the Tuesday Wire on 95BFM. Now that New Zealand has moved to the traffic light system and Auckland is in the red setting, Auckland Transport is having to adapt their public transport services to suit the new restrictions. Nearly 60 night bus services have been reinstated to help people get home now that hospitality has reopened. Auckland Transport is also still continuing to require masks and scan in on transport. And some timetables, timetables overall will stay reduced as they have during lockdown until later in the summer due to much reduced use of the transport system. During lockdown, the number of people on Auckland's public transport has lowered significantly to 5% of 2019's figures. This is due to a halving of capacity for social distancing and AT's messaging that calls for public transport to only be used for essential journeys only in lockdown. Stacey Vanderputten, who is the group manager of Metro Services at Auckland Transport, spoke with me this morning about how the red setting will impact public transport. We also speak about how Auckland Transport has been coping in lockdown and how they are keeping people safe while COVID is still a community threat in the red setting.
Well, in terms of obviously moving to the traffic light system, it wasn't a huge change for public transport, but what it did allow is an increased capacity because under the previous alert level 3, we had reduced capacity, so there's only 50% available capacity on board with spacing. And in terms of reinstating the night buses, the motivation for that was really to support the hospitality sector and enable safe journeys home to people that were out in town.
How was lockdown for Auckland Transport and what has sort of changed now that we're in this new red setting?
Well, lockdown obviously means there's really minimal in terms of people on public transport. It reduces substantially, so about 5% of 2019 figures pre-COVID. And, you know, in terms of alert level 4, that means, you know, there is substantially reduced capacity on board. But, I mean, obviously we have the tools to be able to support customers to make informed decisions when they're boarding public transport in terms of capacity available on board. In terms of, obviously, incrementally, with every change, you can see an increase in terms of people coming back on board. And it is slow, absolutely, but we saw quite a big increase last week. It popped up at up 11% last week. So we're currently sitting on about 32% of patronage in comparison to 2019.
That is a pretty amazing, like, drop, though. That's massive. I can't believe that.
Oh, it is huge, huge drop. But, I mean, of course, the messaging is paramount around that. It is for essential journeys only.
Totally.
For those that need to use it to get to work, or those that are undertaking essential trips and those alert levels. And people really do, ensure that they're doing the right thing, which is great to see. But it is a big drop to public transport.
So you did say there has been an increase in customers over the last week, seeing more people get on public transport. What is Auckland Transport doing to make people feel safe in this new setting? Because obviously there's been a lot of uncertainty for people and nerves about getting back to this new normal situation. What is AT doing on public transport to make sure that people feel reassured and that they are safe taking public transport now?
Yeah, well, I guess in terms of our messaging, that hasn't changed. Now, we've always concentrated on two things, and that is, you know, what do you need to know when using public transport in terms of what kinds of measures there are at each stage, and also what we're doing to keep people safe. And so that are two sort of important things. And look, what we do know is obviously there were a lot of trips identified as places of interest during this outbreak, but there was not any sort of recorded report in terms of onboard transmission. So it does demonstrate that obviously face coverings are a key measure. And we've had face coverings on board public transport since late last year. And so with that, in terms of already being part of somebody that uses public transport, generally what they do, that has really helped in terms of that. And of course, you know, enhanced cleaning regime and making sure that people have the tools to be able to make informed choices based on, you know, their comfort in terms of how to use public transport. So having those real-time capacity indications really helps somebody make an informed choice about whether they want to take a particular service or they want to wait for the next one. And I think those tools in terms of helping customers make those decisions is really important so that they have the confidence when using public transport. But it really is about face coverings, and it is about making sure that you use your hot card and that it's registered, and that people scan the QR codes, and that, of course, that, you know, on board it's clean and hygienic and it has the measures in place to be able to support customers.
Fantastic. And I suppose it's going to be a little bit of a funny period now for everybody getting into the swing of things again, particularly with Christmas coming up. I suppose we might see a bigger change in the new year. But I certainly had a couple of our news teamers talk about you can get on the front door of the bus now, and people were confused when getting on the back door because they're so used to that being the norm.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've had 3 months where there was red or, you know, sort of bus boarding. So going back to boarding through the front is different, right, in terms of if you're used to doing that. I think one important thing about obviously going back to front door boarding is it improves airflow as well. So if the driver's opening both doors, then you're getting that increased airflow through the bus, which is, you know, a positive thing in terms of keeping the airflow frequent and through the bus as such. And, you know, with that, in terms of the Christmas period, it's always traditionally a quiet time, and we expect that to continue in terms of that. And we do have a reduced timetable. We stayed with the timetables that we currently have in place through the Christmas period, but we'll be monitoring every day. And if we do need to sort of increase capacity, we will. We've got the means to be able to do so, but then it'll be back to what we call business as usual in terms of weekday timetables come late January, early February at this stage, unless we need to change beforehand. But yeah, looking at it every day and seeing if there are any pinch points on the network, because of course, you know, if you have full buses, etc., that does obviously may impact somebody's, you know, I guess, perception in terms of on board and at comfort levels. So making sure that we're responding to that's going to be really important.
That was Stacey van der Putten, who is the Group Manager of Metro Services at Auckland Transport, speaking about how the traffic light system has affected Auckland Transport's services.
The Wire.
I don't know, and frankly the whole thing gives me the heebie-jeebies.
The Wire.
Massey Wellington University student President Tessa Guest is a primary organiser of the Free Fares campaign in New Zealand. Run by Aotearoa Collective for the Public Transport Equity, Free Fares is aiming for all public transport in New Zealand to be free for tertiary students and people under 25. The idea is that it will not only help tertiary students pay for the education and living costs they have, but also aid in reducing the emissions which are contributing to climate change. I spoke to Tessa about the Free Fares campaign and the government's support of it.
What is the Free Fares initiative?
Yeah, so the Free Fares campaign is something that has been going on since about mid this year. It started in Wellington, where we formed the Pōneke Collective for Public Transport Equity. And from the start, we were campaigning for, well, originally focusing just on tertiary students and community services card holders. And after having some meetings with the local council and with the Minister of Transport, we were advised to move the campaign to be national, particularly because within some spaces of policy change and, yeah, different kind of governmental projects, it made more sense to implement something for the whole country rather than just at one place, which also is amazing to be able to do something more ambitious. So after that, we made our campaign national, and with more consultation, we formed the Aotearoa Collective for Public Transport Equity, and are now advocating for free public transport for tertiary students, community services cardholders, and under 25s in the whole country. Yeah, and our campaign's called Free Fares. So we started a petition. We have almost 7,000 signatures now. Yeah, we've been lobbying for months, working with the Minister of Transport, you know, trying to get him to hear and see our campaign as many times as possible, and he said he sees it almost every day, so that's a good sign. Yeah, and working with a collective of student associations, community organisations like poverty action groups, church groups, everyone. We have weekly Zooms, and yeah, there's all sorts of different people who are involved.
And how do transport fares impact tertiary students so much that it's an important initiative or cause to pay attention to and demand free fares for?
Tertiary students obviously is the space that I represent, and I couldn't be more passionate about the need for free public transport for students, because pretty much every day it's a choice between buying your lunch or going to uni, because even though it might cost a few dollars a day to get to uni, a few dollars is desperate for students. That's a huge part of their budget, because all the other living expenses are so high, and same time our living costs or loans are so low. So anything that helps living become easier for students is something that we need to be lobbying for, pretty much. So yeah, I think it goes hand in hand with all the other kinds of living costs, particularly housing and renting, but public transport seems like an achievable goal to lobby for change.
And as you said, you're working with a lot of organisations and the government's had some talks. Are you hopeful that this initiative be kicked off the ground and actually see some real progress and proof of all the work that you've put into over the next few years? Do you have a kind of timeline of when this might all come together?
I feel really optimistic. It still is a big ask, and we still don't have the concrete things in place that will give us the confidence to know that it will happen. But our goal, and we've made this clear to the Minister of Transport, is for this to be implemented in next year's budget and then rolled out the year after that. And so when working with the government and local and regional councils, obviously there's all sorts of other timelines at play, and that could make things happen even sooner or potentially later, but our hope is to see it no later than 2023 for the whole country. But yeah, it takes a lot of internal lobbying and a lot of things to line up for that to happen. So we are realistic that, that things don't always go away in these spaces, and so we're committed to continuing the fight until we get the results that we want.
And how would Fees Free kind of be rolled out? Like, would there be students or regions that would have a priority over others?
I think the goal is, within our three target groups, the goal is to see free fares across the whole country for those people, so community service card holders, tertiary students, and everyone under 25. And it's, I guess, we're keen to feed into how that looks, but we're not the experts in that space. So we have linked up with a bunch of researchers and academics, and we also, in different parts of the country, are working with local councils to
see how that could look, but yeah, it's not our decision. So it could be something like equivalent to the gold card at the moment, where you might have a bit of a card that you show that gets you your way in, or maybe you need to show some other form of ID, like a student ID. But yeah, honestly, we're just keen to like do the lobbying and then get the experts to kind of do the implementing. Yep.
And you just briefly mentioned it, but in different regions and areas of the country, there's obviously different forms of transport, such as here in Auckland. We have ferries and trains as well as buses. Will the Free Fares Initiative kind of look at how transport is used in different regions?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, our hope is for this ask to be implemented on all forms of public transport, including trains and ferries. Yeah, me being Wellington-based, I relate to the use of trains and how expensive they are at the moment. Like, amazing, love a train, but like can't afford to be paying $50 a week to go on a train, and let alone having to get on a bus as well. So yeah, we're hoping this to be implemented on all forms of public transport. And the other kind of part of that conversation that we've had is it's not just about the city centres, because I think it's already there's a high use and like higher reliability and higher quality of public transport. But I think what we're hoping to see equally is improved quality and frequency of services in the regions. Just because I think they're still underutilized in a lot of places. And so our hope is that we're making it more accessible. At the same time, the government can improve those services so that more people rely on them and get out of private cars and reduce our emissions and all sorts of good things like that.
Just so people can get involved, and if they're interested in working this yourself, in what ways can people help out with the initiative? What have you been doing to advocate for it, and how can people support or volunteer?
Love it. Yeah, that's a great question. First and foremost, if you haven't signed our petition, please sign it. We're hoping to get to, ambitiously, 10,000 signatures before Christmas. So if you, just search up Free Fares on Google and you'll see it there. Yeah, we welcome anyone to be involved in our campaign. All hands are welcome and necessary. So you can get in contact through our website. There's a contact form there and an email address. Yeah, I think something that we're really looking for is people in different regions, not just in the major city centres, to be involved. One really big part of the campaign over the last month or two has been working with councils asking them to put a motion forward to support the campaign. So we now have, I think, 8 councils within Wellington, Auckland, actually not Auckland, Hamilton, North Island, South Island, everyone is supporting the campaign. But yeah, there are lots of other councils that don't yet support it. So if there are people in different regions who have capacity and any kind of ability in that space, we'd love to work with you and try and get more traction and more support, because I think the more of that, the more likely this will go ahead.
And do you have any final words that you might want to say to the government, or a message that you would like to send out?
Yeah, I guess my word to the government would be that the implementation of this campaign would be as much of a win for the government as it would be for the people. So obviously it's so clear, the reasoning for this campaign, for students, for all of our groups. We're like increasingly not being able to live in our own country because of the price of it. And so we need to be able to get around and afford lunch at the same time. But at the same time, we also really desperately need to reduce our emissions as a country. And so this is the perfect way to do it. The government literally has accountability to be reducing emissions, and it's already outlined within the Climate Commission that this is one of the best ways to do it and the most achievable ways to do it. So not only would improve the lives of thousands, but it would also help us meet our climate target, which we all need to do desperately. So I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be doing it now.
That was me discussing the Free Fares campaign with organiser Tessa Guest and the benefits zero transport fees for students would have in New Zealand.
Thank you so much, Emily. You're on the Tuesday Wire on 95BFM with Jemima and Emily. If you have any thoughts on the pieces on the show today, do send me through a text on 5395. We'll be right back with one last piece about where you should go swimming this summer. So do stay tuned in, but we'll be right back after a little break.
Who's ready for a beer then?
Breathe a hearty sigh of relief, because the Beer Spot is back. With 40 delicious bezies on tap, they're also kitted out with all the mod cons to keep you safe. QR codes, vaccine pass scanning, the lot. They've missed you. The Beer Spot, 5 locations Auckland-wide, open now. Bookings are strongly recommended. Go to thebeerspot.co.nz.
Whether you need gifts for family and friends, delicious food to fill up Christmas lunch, or add a table centrepiece, you'll find everything you need for a fantastic festive season at Scarecrow. Part of the Sustainable Business Network, the majority of Scarecrow stock is New Zealand made, so you can feel good about what you're buying. Scarecrow, kitchen, florist, grocer. Open 7 days a week in two locations, Victoria Street East by Albert Park and 811 Mount Eden Road. Or shop online at scarecrow.co.nz.
We're at a dinner table in a flat.
All right, help yourself.
What's in this?
Why? What do you mean? It's good for you.
It tastes a bit like electro swing.
Well, it's not. I seasoned it with a little upright bass, and we had leftover jazz vocal.
I'm getting takeout.
What's cooking? Every Wednesday evening, Johnny and Big Hungry are joined on 95BFM Drive by a very special guest for great chat about extremely savoury tunes. What's cooking? Supported by Auckland Art Gallery Toi O Tamaki. Become a member today for great art benefits.
I love the pop shots, mostly color bowl, lemon lime, caviar, spread, ice, beluga roll.
Sights on the front row, with the eyes closed underneath blindfolds to remain unaccountable.
I think they got too comfortable, feet up and they're inflatable.
Yeah, I'ma call him Big Michael, cause I got beef right now with this one dude named Michael.
And I thought it'd sound cool. Got never-ending hollow-pointed rounds that full of doo-doo.
Doo-doo.
You better hope you're foolproof.
I'm a fool. Cause all my bars are stupid. I'll make stupid good look.
Doodle raps like some coloring books.
Over the line and I oop.
When calling them out in the hook.
Keep them on the back foot.
Traveling back hard and backwards. I smoke them out backwards.
Back and forth like a tennis match. On all fours like a pup or a house beat. I see you dipping in the kitchen how a mouse be. Sipping on cheap pale ales that you got for free. Now who you connect that you're scooping? I heard your boy Barry's moving boxes for Coopers. Now that don't impress me, Mike. Honestly, your baggage is bad for my back and my psyche. Unlike me, you ain't getting feisty. Timid soft boy tendencies seem kinda likely now. You don't wanna fight me. Just try and see yourself in the past, future, and the present. Don't take offense now. You're the one that said it. Trying to credit me to the level of a peasant. I ain't trying to sever you, so you might as well forget it. You can keep uploading dick pics onto Reddit.
Would it take to change a light bulb? One to climb the ladder, one to quote the Bible. One for the revival of some cultural denial. One for the false idols and one to break the cycle. But don't hold your breath, hold your own. Know your strength, play your role. And like Drake said too, you better know yourself. Get them good views for when the posers do expose themselves. Wow, like them modeling tidy whiteys. I might be hikey, calling out these Mikeys. So mic me, and not another white collar. Pseudo scholar, text my dollar man. If you follow, holler then. This is really about to go down. And when it does, you better come correct. Just like a pronoun, roll now. See, I've been around a block or two. Seasons change, sagas don't like we're watching Doctor Who.
Way back, receding bald cap. Me and Peggy head strap, what LeBron used to have.
You a different kinda under hat.
Lay your left, red tracks on your path. Indiana Jones, man. Yeah, you're both H-bands. Of the times you would've said, yet you still repeat the act, repeat the act, repeat. Like every episode of Friends, you're still playing. Still back to back, back to back, back to back. Ass to ass.
Why you keep running back, same tracks in your back? Got in memory lapsed. Got 'em all gassed.
Well, I've seen that. I don't need that. You can keep that. But you're attached. The pain on my back. I got Draymond's backpack. Messing with my step back. I'm getting pretty tired of carrying your ass.
We don't need.
We don't need you anymore.
Yeah.
We don't need you anymore. We don't need you anymore.
I don't know how to say this, Betelgeuse star?
You're not a child of the 80s. If you were, you would know the film with a similar name. The star is Betelgeuse.
Oh.
Yeah.
The Wire.
You're on the Tuesday Wire. As the weather starts to warm up, more and more people will be thinking about heading down to their local swimming spot for a swim to get cool. However, how can you be sure that your swimming spot is safe and swimmable? Can I Swim Here is an online tool produced by Land Air Water Aotearoa, or LAWA. The tool helps New Zealanders make educated decisions about where they choose to swim by giving users details about the level of contamination at swimming spots right around the country. I spoke to Anna Madara-Smith, who is the team leader and principal scientist for the Marine and Coast Team at Hawke's Bay Regional Council and project lead for LAWA's Can I Swim Here? We spoke about the tool. We began our conversation by talking about the state of water quality in New Zealand, how this is determined, and what is being done to prevent the contamination of our waterways. I began by asking Anna about the state of water quality in Aotearoa.
We've got some amazing places to go swimming in New Zealand, Aotearoa. You know, it's part of our national pastime for New Zealanders to head off to the river or head off to the beach and go for a swim. Throughout New Zealand, our coastal beaches generally have excellent water quality. Freshwater areas, they can be more influenced by things like rainfall. And our lagoon areas, so they're the sort of area where your river or stream may meet the beach, they tend to be a little bit more influenced by wildlife and the like, so you can get some higher level in areas like that. But in general, we've got some amazing places to go swimming. It's just knowing where to look for information and what sort of things to look for when you're out on site as well.
Are there some areas that are much worse than others? I suppose potentially the obvious answer is close to cities, but I was wondering whether you could talk a little bit more about that.
So you're absolutely right. You know, close to cities, we can tend to see a lot of influence of different kinds of things. Like we might have ageing infrastructure. It could be runoff from even things as simple as people walking dogs. And then, as I mentioned before, lagoons can be another area where we tend to get higher bacteria levels. And when I talk about bacteria levels or swimmability in places being better than others, what I'm referring to there is the presence of fecal material, or poo, basically. And that can come from things like animals in the catchment, any agricultural catchment. You might have sheep or cows or deer. It may come from, as I said, people walking dogs, or it may come from human sources. For example, where you do have those cross-connections, sewer networks. And when you get fecal material coming into the water body, it indicates the presence of pathogens that may cause illnesses like Giardia, Cryptosporidium, that sort of thing. They're the ones that can give you skin irritations, eye irritations, tummy bugs are the most common. So what we look for when we talk about recreational water quality and bacterial or microbiological water quality is we look for the presence of an indicator species. For freshwater, we use a species called Escherichia coli, or E. coli, and that tells us whether or not fecal material is present in the water body. And there's a correlation that's been developed between the presence of that bacteria and the risk of you getting sick from being in that water. E. coli in itself, apart from one particular strain, isn't so much of a problem for you. It's that indicating presence of other pathogens, which are really costly and difficult to monitor. So we use that as a sort of indicator species for others. In marine or coastal waters, we use an indicator called enterococci. And again, that's got a correlation or a relationship with a number of enterococci we find with the risk of somebody getting sick from swimming in the water body. So where we've got the presence of these indicator species that indicate that fecal material's in the water, that's when we can start to say, hey, look, at that level, the risk of illness is very low. Or we can say, hey, it's getting up a little bit. It's still considered acceptable. But if you were immunocompromised or similar, you may wish to stay out. And then there's a level at which we say, hey, look, the level's up there, and we would consider this site unsuitable for swimming. And that's when we recommend that people don't actually enter the water or go into the water for a swim. Choose somewhere else. And that's where Can I Swim Here comes in.
sounds like it involves a lot of testing. But how do those pathogens and those indicators, how do they go away? How do you fix an area that potentially has a high level of bacteria that's going to potentially cause harm to swimmers? Is it just a matter of there being a lot of rain? I suppose in my mind, I'm like, where does it go?
Great question. No, great question. So like anything, it's got its natural predators, so it can be eaten. These are just bacteria. They're just part of the food chain. They can be eaten. They can be broken down by UV. You may know of sewage plants or something that have a UV treatment system that helps to break down those pathogens. And you're right, they can get flushed out. And then they'll just, because they no longer have a place to live in your gut, or the gut of warm-blooded mammals, they will live for a certain period of time, but they won't survive for much longer. So that's how, once they're in the system, they can get out of the system. The other thing is about stopping them getting in the first place. And sometimes that's more easy than others. For example, we know that when stock particularly will go into the water over summer to drink, that they are more likely to defecate or poo into the water. So actually having stock exclusion, whether it be fencing, whether it be alternative water sources or that sort of thing, can be really important for stopping that direct deposition of fecal material into the water. Also, that overland flow that I mentioned, when it rains and it washes over the country and you've got pets from cows defecating, that's another way that it can get into the water body. So actually having riparian planting will help filter that before it gets in. None of them are magic bullets, but altogether they help. Even things just making sure you pick up after your dog and making sure that your infrastructure within cities or your septic tank, for example, if you're in a rural setting and you're on a septic tank, making sure that that's serviced regularly and it's working really well, because we certainly see some problems coming out of aged or malfunctioning septic systems in some of those rural or coastal settlements as well.
So let's move on to talk a little bit more about Can I Swim Here and what it is and how it works.
There are a number of ways that fecal material can get into the water bodies, and that risk changes depending on where you are, like we talked about, urban settings or in lagoons or that sort of thing, or after rain. So Can I Swim Here is a site that brings together across New Zealand over 750 sites, and it's a really important source for checking water quality before you go for a swim over the summer period. You may be visiting an area that you're not really that familiar with. A lot of us may know in our local area some of the sites that are really good for swimming, or those that you might just stay a little bit away from. But when you travel to new areas of New Zealand, it may be a bit more difficult. So this is a really useful tool for being able to go very quickly online, hey, I want to go for a swim here. What does the water quality look like? And it operates in two ways. You mentioned that, you know, it sounds like it involves a lot of testing. It absolutely does. All over summer, we have a number of people out around New Zealand taking water quality samples and bringing them back to a lab. The other thing we use is modelling to try and determine whether or not a site may be compromised because there might have been rain, that sort of thing. But so the first thing that we look at Lara is the weekly result. And we compare that to national guidelines. Green means acceptable. Amber, again, is that one where I said still acceptable, but if you were immunocompromised or you were just a little bit unsure, then probably stay out of the water. The red is when we start to say, hey, yep, this water is unsuitable for swimming and the risk of illness for contact recreation here is considered too high. So jumping onto Lawa, typing in the site that you want to go to or navigating via the map, it'll give you what that weekly result looks like. You can then toggle over. It gives you an overall bacteria grade, and that takes all the information for the last 5 years and says, how often does this site exceed? I mean, are we talking about one that might exceed once in a blue moon? Or is it a site that regularly exceeds? And that can change your decision-making about whether you want to choose to swim here. We've designed it to try and be a little bit of a one-stop shop. It also tells you about facilities that are there, whether the beaches are patrolled, and what the weather looks like at the moment. You know, you may be sunny where you are and wanting to head down somewhere, but the winds are gusting or it's raining down there. So we've really tried to make it useful to people to help them decide where the best place to go for swimmers.
That was Anna Madaris-Smith speaking about Can I Swim Here, which is a tool produced by Landia Water Aotearoa, or LAWA, and also speaking more broadly about water quality here in New Zealand, particularly over summer as we head into the time where you might like to go for a swim on your afternoon off. If you are interested in checking out Can I Swim Here, you can just punch into Google Can I Swim Here, and the top result is a LAWA website result, and you can click on that one and it will show you all the different beaches across New Zealand and navigate the wee map on the left. Or if you're looking for the URL address, it is www.lawa.org.nz/explore-data/swimming. And that should get you there.
That was The Wire.
That brings us to the end of the Tuesday Wire for another week. Massive thank you to you for tuning in and listening to the show and sending us through your texts. We always love to hear your thoughts, so thank you very much. Big thank you to Emily for producing the show today. How did you feel it went?
I think it went pretty good. Kind of fumbled the bag at one point, but that's okay. We move forward.
Yeah. You know, first time back in studio in a very, very long time, and first so wire in studio. So
long.
Yeah, it's big and it's exciting.
It is.
We will be back with some more news later in the afternoon and then another wire for you tomorrow. So do stay tuned in to 95BFM. And right up next is Jin with the 1 to 4. So stay tuned in and we'll catch you later. Matua.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.